when Dr. Kokoros first gave us a book for our children at the first doctor's appointment we went to, the kids actually thought they had to give it back.
Well, the first time I received books for my children from my pediatrician, I thought it was pretty cool.
And she was like, no, that's for you to keep. That's for you to keep. You read that. And we were like, oh, really? And she was like, yeah, it's part of a program that they're doing to help encourage reading in home.
Every time we go to the doctor, we come home with a book.
So my kids actually look forward to going to the doctor because they know they're getting a book.
Those are some thoughts of two parents involved in Reach Out and Read, a national program preparing America's youngest children to succeed in school by using doctors as partners to prescribe books and encourage families to read together. I'm Emily Auerbach, and this is University of the Air. The first 5 years of life offer a unique and crucial opportunity for learning, as the brain is developing rapidly during those early years. Many children, especially from low-income families, are not read to from birth and enter kindergarten without the basic literacy skills they need to succeed. What long-term impact does it have if parents don't read to their children? What role can pediatricians play in helping to encourage reading in the first years of life? Joining me today to talk about a national program called Reach Out and Read are three guests. Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria is a pediatrician at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health and the medical director of Wisconsin's Reach Out and Read program, and he'll be explaining the science behind the push for early reading. Later in the hour, I'll be joined by the co-chairs of Wisconsin's Reach Out and Read program, Jessica Doyle, a retired teacher and the former First Lady of Wisconsin, and Martha Vukelic-Alston, past president of the Foundation for Madison Public Schools. First for you, Dr. Nafsaria, welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you for having us.
This is a really exciting program to read about, the number of children all over the country now that are being affected by it. Can you tell us something about the history behind this program?
Yeah, this program is actually not a new idea. It's been around for 25 years. It started in Boston at Boston City Hospital when some pediatricians had this wonderful flash of insight saying that, gee, these books are disappearing from our waiting rooms and exam rooms. We're working with poor families. We're working with kids at risk. Why don't we give them the books? Why don't we give them the books? And why don't we also tell them that it's a good thing to be reading together and sharing books? And from that really is where Reach Out and Read was born.
But I'm seeing a lot of things in the news, you know, very recently. You know, you were quoted in the New York Times back in June, and increasing studies that show that by the age of three, children from disadvantaged backgrounds may have heard like 30 million fewer words, or, you know, that targeting children early on is making a big difference. Why this new interest in it?
Well, the big news in June was the American Academy of Pediatrics released a policy statement saying that literacy is something that should be encouraged from the earliest days of life. And what's really interesting is the science of early brain and child development is actually starting to catch up with programs that have been doing that, you know, all along. So really, you know, people think of Reach Out and Read and they say, gee, it's a book giveaway program. Isn't that lovely? Well, yeah, it is, but it's more than that. It's also where we're encouraging families to read together, and more importantly, we're building the family's ability to work together with their child, to interact with their child, to really build a strong, supportive, nurturing relationship with their child. If you're a parent who has not had the modeling around you of how to interact with a young baby, an infant, a toddler, and so on, and we tell you, oh, just play with your child, talk to them, you know, they look at us sometimes like, but I don't know what that means. And then they go home feeling lost, and they don't do it because they're just not sure. And they, in a sense, they feel it's kind of silly. I'm talking to my young baby. Does my young baby actually hear me or know what's going on? But through Reach Out and Read, when we give the advice, well, read aloud to your child. Well, that's something that most people know how to do. So they'll be able to really work together with their child. They'll be able to have that relationship. They're able to have that interaction that we know drives development. Because ultimately, what we do know clearly, development is driven by relationships. It's driven by having people interacting with you. It's not through toys and videos and things like that. Those things can help later on, but you need to have a loving, caring adult or older child in the picture.
So the reading, in a way, is a way of creating that relationship because somebody has to be there with you. They can't just plunk you down in front of a television set.
Exactly. I like to think of it as like a scaffold or a script. You know, it says, here, do this with your child. And that's much more achievable than this vague notion of, well, just interact with your child. Well, what does that mean if it's not something that you've had modeled for you?
I saw that you were quoted as saying that those first 1,000 days are critical. Why is that with an infant? What is so different about the brain or so malleable at that point?
Well, that's exactly it. The brain is malleable. Those neurons are wiring at such a strong pace, at such a quick pace. We want that wiring to happen in the best possible way. And it seems that in the first 3 years of life, that first 1,000 days, there's so much more potential for that wiring to happen in good ways or, unfortunately, in not so good ways. That really sets the stage, sets the foundation for what happens later on. So if you want to have good physical health, good mental health, behavioral learning, all that stuff, that really has to happen based on what's happening in the first 1,000 days of life. Now, that's not to say that it's a lost cause if not so good things happen in the first 1,000 days of life. But if you want to look at where we get the most money for our intervention dollars, where we get the most effect, it's really in the first 1,000 days, but yet our public investment in programs to change the brain is actually later on. It's in the teens and the 20s and through routes like criminal justice and school rehabilitation and things like that.
It's a little scary to think that if we miss that window of time, that somebody could almost be doomed.
It is scary, and I certainly don't want anyone to feel that if they didn't do the first 1,000 days, quote-unquote, right, that, you know, it's a lost cause. There's actually so much we can do, and we even know, like with young adults, with young parents, that their ability to develop good socio-emotional skills, there's still that window as late as into their 20s. But what we do know is that it's a lot easier, a lot cheaper, and a lot more effective to do it early on. And the prevention approach really makes a big difference. There's been noted economists who have done studies showing that for every dollar you put into early childhood programs, we're seeing $4 to $9 of returns. And these are Nobel laureates in economics and Federal Reserve folks making this analysis, not pediatricians.
One of the things that always strikes me when I look at the data on literacy is how unfair it is in terms of at-risk families, low-income families, because let's say you're from a low-income family and you're working two jobs at minimum wage, you don't have the leisure to sit down and curl up with a book the same way or to have your child in expensive daycare or with a, you know, one-to-one provider. Mm-hmm. You know, you're barely making it. Mm-hmm. And you may have come out of a home where you yourself were not given that kind of educational background, so you're doing what's familiar. It just seems that it's very difficult to break a cycle of generational poverty. Mm-hmm. How do you see the Reach Out and Read program as fitting in there?
Yeah, and I agree with you completely that poverty, it's not just a lack of money. It's also a lack of resources and a lack of time. There's very little slack in poor families' lives to be able to do the things that honestly, they'd like to be able to do. They'd like to be great parents, just like every other parent out there. The issue becomes that if you're working a second job so you can keep your home and you can keep dinner on the table and all those things, who am I to tell them that they should be home instead reading to their child? They're going for the more basic needs first, which I think any reasonable person would do. What Reach Out and Read does is it sends a message of hope. You know, there's often this little voice, I think, in the back of many poor parents' heads saying, you know what, I messed up in school. Of course my kid's going to be just like me. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But when you have a six-month-old there in their lap and you hand a book to the child and they're looking at the face, the picture of the baby on the front of the book and really just staring at it and engaging. And when we point that out and say, oh, look at how much he's liking looking at that book, the parents say, wow. My child likes books even though they're only 6 months old. That I didn't realize that. And it gives them some idea of hope. And when we say 5 minutes, 10 minutes at night, that's all we're asking for, that little time for them to be with their parent in their lap, to not be yelled at because their parent's so stressed out trying to get everything done. It provides that little bit of nurturing. And that little bit of nurturing can go a long way. And that's really the message that's so hopeful. And we're giving them the tools and we're giving them the route to do this all right there in the office. It's not even a prescription that you have to get filled at the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. It's right there.
And why at the doctor's office? Mm-hmm. Because I would think that families are only there, you know, a few times. Mm-hmm. There might be 9 months mm-hmm. between visits mm-hmm. or a year.
Mm-hmm. Because the well child visit, whether it's done by a pediatrician or a family doc or a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, it's a universal point of access for virtually everyone. Most kids are coming in for their checkups. There's actually very few who don't. Versus you look at how many kids, particularly in poverty, who are going to early childhood programs in the first 3 years of life. It's not many. Most are being watched by neighbors and, you know, relatives and informal arrangements of all sort. We can't reach them through this sort of messaging. we can through healthcare programs and clinics. The other side of it is that, for better or for worse, parents listen to healthcare providers. You know, they take our advice about all sorts of things, about back to sleep and nutrition and immunizations and all sorts of things. This becomes part of that same advice, and they take it to heart. And I'll tell you, one of the most wonderful things about what I do is when they come in for their 15-month checkup, and I ask, so do you have a chance to share books together? And parents will look at me and say, oh, yes, we do it every day because you told us to. I say, great, that's wonderful. And then as those children get older, when I see them when they're 3 or 4 or 5, and I look at how easily they're handling the books and identifying letters and what's going on in pictures, I know that's a child who's primed to succeed in kindergarten versus the kids that came to us later or have had other challenges, and I see them at age 4 holding the book upside down, closed, and they don't seem to know what to do with it. And they're just a setup for failure on the very first day of kindergarten. And I want to go back to something you said earlier. It is a shame that so much of children's destiny is based on what zip code they were born and lived in, because everyone deserves the chance to make good choices. If you don't have that chance, then those choices just aren't there.
I noticed in the description of the program that it specifies new books.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why.
We want to send a message. One, we want it to be high-quality books. There's a lot of variety in children's books, which is good, but sometimes it's not so good. There's a lot of books that are basically thinly veiled advertisement for toys and don't really have any depth to them. We want the books to be new also because we want to send an important message. This is important enough that we invested the relatively few dollars to give you a brand-new book that's your very own. You know, we don't use used syringes for immunizations. We don't use used equipment in other ways. Why are the books any different? We want it to be new books. We want them to be high quality. And we want them to be developmentally appropriate. We give board books to children under age 2. Why? Because, one, they're tougher. We don't want kids to be ripping up the books. But number 2, board books are great. Those thick pages are designed for kids who have a palmar grasp, you know, where they're using all 4 fingers. Pincer grasps are what you need in order to be able to turn paper pages as they get older. So it's actually a wonderful piece of engineering. It's designed for exactly that age group, and it works really well.
What if I come to you and I am from Mexico? Mm-hmm. I am just learning English. I have a 1-year-old child. What book do you put in my hands?
Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's probably about 60% of my patient population. I put a book that's in Spanish in your hands because I want it to be something that is in the language of the home. I want the family to feel comfortable looking at it. I want them to be able to share it together with their child. Even if they can't read in any language, I say, fine, talk about the pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, make up stories. Let the child guide the book. You can tell the story backwards if they want. Those are all perfectly acceptable ways to develop early literacy. Now, certainly in kindergarten and first grade, you want them going in order and things like that. But, you know, we're talking about young children here. So we want them using a book that has the language of the home in it and that they're comfortable looking at together and enjoying.
Now, this is speaking as the daughter of a librarian, but, you know, libraries are there as a very democratic resource that anyone can go and get. I mean, I remember coming home from the Madison Public Library with my parents with cardboard boxes filled with books, mm-hmm. and that would last us just a week or so. But what does the program do, if anything, mm-hmm. to link the parents not only to those brand new books they've been given, but also to the wealth that is in the public library?
Mm-hmm. We do a lot with libraries. I actually am a graduate of library school. I have a master's in children's librarianship, so libraries are near and dear to my heart. And we actually have some close alliances throughout the state. Here in Madison, we work with the Madison Public Library. There's messaging asking them to, you know, suggesting that they visit the library. We're working on library card applications to be handed out with the books and really sending the clear message that, by the way, this is a free resource. Anyone who lives in, you know, the area can access it, and that there's so much more there. If all my programs do is to get families in the doors of libraries, then I consider it a success, quite honestly, because then it's offering all these wonderful resources that they can then take advantage of. Because, again, as you said earlier, they come in to see us very few times. The standard well-child schedule is not that frequent. But if we can motivate a behavior change that changes what's happening in the home, that's making daily reading a part of that family's life, then great. Then we've really accomplished a lot of things. There are many other libraries throughout the state that we've partnered with. Some of them have gone to clinics in their communities and said, hey, you don't do Reach Out and Read. We heard about this. Let us help you with this. Let us help you do fundraising and applying and getting this together. And that's often been the what really helps those clinics get started is having someone else in the community saying, let's partner together on this. You wouldn't think libraries and clinics would talk all that often. Well, now they have an excuse to.
That's great. What about the increasing emphasis on electronics? I've seen two-year-olds using iPads, and I mean, we all have. It's a little bit frightening when a toddler seems better equipped than I am to, you know, to do some program. But what about a parent that says, well, I don't need this book because I've got my Kindle and I've got all these devices?
Mm-hmm. You know, I've rarely had a parent actually say that I don't need books because of this. If anything, most parents, I think, are sometimes a little worried about how their young children are drawn to electronics like a moth to a flame. You know, I think the messaging that parents need to hear is, one, if you're looking at a book on screen, I do think there's some things you can lose. You lose some of the tactile feedback of, you know, turning pages by hand and things like that. The images may not be as beautiful as they are on the page, depending on the device screen and all that. But to a certain extent, I will say text is text. You know, that if you say, hey, my child will happily listen to me reading this book aloud if it's on my Kindle screen versus in paper format, you know, fine. We'll take that. What worries me with young kids and devices, though, is that unless you're absolutely scrupulous as a parent, and virtually no one is, the child learns that not only can that device, you know, have a book on it, it also plays a game, you know, and all sorts of other things. And it's very easy for that child to say, oh, please, 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 you know, let's play this and whine and complain until the parent finally gives in frustration. Well, no paper book is going to suddenly start playing games, you know. So you don't have that displacement effect where the child just says, no, I want this instead. I want this, I want this, I want this over and over.
I come at this sort of from the adult side with the Odyssey Project, where I'm targeting parents and grandparents and getting them into college, where we see a trickle-down effect on then young children reading more because their parents are. Do you actually find with Reach Out and Read that it goes in the opposite direction, that as you put more value on getting a book in the hands of a parent to read to their children, maybe that parent also mm-hmm. starts thinking, boy, I should get back into reading?
Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, throughout the country, more people who are doing the clinicians that are doing the Bell Child visit have discovered that the parent is more likely to reveal in that context that they themselves have literacy issues mm-hmm. than they are to reveal it in the course of their own visit. People will come into the doctor's office and tell us all sorts of things that they would never, ever reveal in public or to even loved ones. They will not tell us that they can't read. It's really one of the last great shames in our society. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of excuses. Oh, I left my reading glasses at home, so I can't fill that form out for you and things like that. And often it's just tactics and ways to just get out of having to admit that they can't read. And that's where we build strong alliances here locally with the Literacy Network, saying, you know, when they reveal that, saying, you know, there's folks that can help you and their services are free and, you know, here's how to contact them and so on. So I do think it becomes a motivator for families in certain cases.
On the website, there are links to all kinds of research articles mm-hmm. and, you know, sort of the idea that there is actually scientific evidence to mm-hmm. back up what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit, mm-hmm. preferably not with mm-hmm. the scientific jargon that sure. often goes with it, but in sort of lay terms, mm-hmm. what is it that happens to children's brains mm-hmm. if they read?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're referring to there's 15 studies that have been published in peer-reviewed journals and showing specifically about Reach Out and Read, because, you know, we have limited dollars in our society, so we want to make sure we're doing something that we know works. So we do know that when families are exposed to Reach Out and Read, those families, at-risk families, are more likely to read together with their young child. It improves the home literacy environment. It does improve the language scores of those children. So we do see those improvements, and they are significant. In terms of more generally, what happens when parents interact with their children on a regular basis, when there's good, strong, supportive relationships? You know, we see changes actually in how the genes are expressed that respond to adversity and stress. We see other changes in terms of learning pathways. We all have within us this potential to be able to deal with adverse experiences. And when we have good, positive, rich, nurturing experiences, that potential gets expressed. We learn how to deal with those things. We learn how to deal with stressful situations as they arise. When we're constantly bombarded with stress, over and over, homelessness, parental substance abuse, inadequate food, you know, those sorts of things, we're always responding in the moment, and our stress systems are always activated and waiting for the other shoe to drop. What's going to happen next? What's there? It's almost like waiting for that tiger to burst into the room. You know, it's going to happen at some point. And you never learn that long-term coping. So then is it any surprise that we see children being referred, like in my practice, over and over for behavior problems, for school performance issues? They don't have good attention spans, their mood's all over the place, because this is what their brains were primed for early in life. And now we're trying to fix that years later, and it's just not so easy.
We're going to talk more about Reach Out and Read when we continue in a moment with University of the Year.
My kids read together all the time. My children are always reading, from my oldest to the youngest. My oldest actually plays teacher with the kids, so they're always reading.
The Reach Out and Read program is very important to my family because it's given my family an opportunity to learn more about different books.
And what we do in our family, instead of the parents always reading to the kids at night, our children read to us bedtime stories. So our family is always reading. Our kids are always reading.
Parents speaking about the Reach Out and Read program, a national program preparing young children to succeed in school by using doctors as partners to prescribe books. I'm Emily Auerbach, and we're back with members of Wisconsin's Reach Out and Read program. We were talking to Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria, and now I'm going to turn to the co-chairs of Wisconsin's program. And that's former First Lady Jessica Doyle and Martha Vukelic Austin. Thank you for being here for University of the Year, first of all.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So give us the state of the state. When did Wisconsin become involved with Reach Out and Read, and what are we doing here in our state?
Wisconsin's coalition was launched about 4 years ago, and we have over 100 participating clinics. We're really, really pleased with the amount of growth since we came together and formed a statewide coalition. Dr. Nafsaria was instrumental in realizing that, yes, we had some clinics that were already involved and many clinicians who were requiring that or strongly prescribing that families read together. But since the statewide coalition was formed, we've, again, seen tremendous growth. We're really pleased about that. And part of the statewide's coalition mission has been to just get the word out that reading to young children is very, very important. We have a lot of families who see now reading as a fun activity that they can do together. And I know for me as a parent and for most of the parents I know, when you have success with your child, success breeds success. And everybody's always looking for a fun activity to do together as a family. So the coalition coming together has tried to reach out into all communities in the state. We have representatives from across the state, and we work with many literacy partners. We have people from the Cooperative Children's Book Center at UW-Madison, for example, from United Ways across the state, and people representing many literacy organizations such as Wisconsin Literacy, as members of our Wisconsin coalition.
And what would you add to that, Martha?
Well, I would add that in the last 4 years, the Reach Out and Read Wisconsin has really been able to support not only the programs that had been existing, but provide the training to clinicians across the state to help grow the program and to help clinics around the state to become part of a national effort. And being part of National Reach Out and Read does give benefits. We are able to provide books at a much cheaper rate. National Reach Out and Read is the biggest buyer of Scholastic books, which has a great reputation. So with the coordination that Reach Out and Read Wisconsin has been able to provide, clinics have come on board. We're over 100, which is amazing. I think that over the last 4 years, the national organization has been a little bit astounded at the growth that we've had and some of the unique partnerships we have made and the effort we make to really reach out not only to clinicians but out to the community, because literacy is really a community, it's a community concern, because if kids aren't brought up to read, we feel the impact pretty quickly in the schools. And with the achievement gap issues that are being brought up in Wisconsin, across the state, this is a way to, an antidote to it. And that if we can put effort into early intervention, that will help as children get to school. So I think the training is really important, and the community awareness that parents can make a difference, child care providers can make a difference, grandparents can make a difference. And that's a message we need to get out.
It does sound great that there are 100 clinics in Wisconsin that take part in this program, but it makes me think, but there must be hundreds and hundreds of clinics that means that are not reached yet. So you probably have a lot of work that you're anticipating doing to get it to spread further.
Exactly right. And I think the clinicians have done a great job of working in their community and being willing to share with one another, how do you get this started? What do you really do? One advantage of having a statewide coalition is that we try to work with hospitals and with clinics that are in low-income areas where perhaps they have several underserved clients. And we're hoping that as a statewide coalition, we can support the training and support those clinics with books.
Now, you said training. So let's say that I'm listening and I am part of a clinic up in Eagle River, and we don't yet have a Reach Out and Read program. I get this program, so I'm going to get some new books that are donated. But what kind of training? It's not just a book giveaway. There's what do you do?
Well, we provide training on how to use the book. It's really used as a developmental assessment tool. Dr. Nasaria has said on multiple occasions, and it always sticks with me, that he would rather walk into a two-year-old well-child visit with a book in hand rather than a stethoscope, because he will find out much more about where the child is developmentally, how they react to the book, and also how the family reacts. You know, parents can either be encouraging of reading or they can not, you know, or not. And so, you know, the training is to use the book at whatever age. Where should a child be at this moment? And if you can identify where children are lacking in certain areas early on, you can, then clinicians are also given ideas on how to help fill in those gaps.
How careful a screening is there of the kind of books? Because I've noticed with some children's books and movies that there are messages that are coming across that are a bit problematic, including sort of the Barbie doll hourglass figure, or, you know, the sort of Cinderella story where all you need is a fairy godmother to give you a nice wardrobe, especially if you have little feet, you know, or looking at pictures of sort of the Dick and Jane type family when maybe your family is nothing like that. What kind of involvement does Reach Out and Read have in terms of selection of books?
That's where the National has been very helpful to us. They work with Scholastic and some other publishers, and they have a recommended list of books. We would agree with you that it's really important to have a developmentally appropriate book, and that does include the topic as well as the culture.
So that if you have a family that is a very atypical family where there's not a, you know, maybe it's a grandparent and a child and, you know, from a different culture, a refugee from South Sudan or whatever it is there an attempt to match that family to a specific book?
I'd say you'd probably be working most likely with across any culture kind of book. There are some beautiful messages. I'm sure you know right. from your work with the Odyssey Project, things that just would really, really touch somebody's heart or deliver a wonderful message. Our local author, Kevin Hankus, comes to mind. His books have very subtle messages that really, I think, speak to everybody of any age and most any culture. We also have several authors that do wordless books, and some of those are included on the Reach Out and Read reading list. And in that case, of course, an adult can fill in, you know, some wonderful, wonderful stories that go with the pictures in those books. We really work hard at this, and I think children's literature has made great progress in that in the last few years. But I agree with you, it's really very important, and we don't want to overlook it.
What are some of the exciting things that you've seen happening here in Wisconsin through this work, where you are talking to a specific clinic or you get something going and you see it translate into some tangible results? Or,
well, I think that speaking with clinicians, they can see that it makes a difference and that they know that by using the books, they are giving parents and children an important message on how important literacy is and how important the 20 minutes a day plus means to the lifetime of everyone in the family. And that time spent is in a busy world is really important. And I think between seeing parents really sitting in an office with the clinician and reading with their child, and the lights go on with the child, and the child kind of is snuggling in, and the parent is reading, and their voice is going up and down and playing a part. That just really, it kind of brings it all home to me and saying, this is what it's all about. And, you know, all the numbers we have about the number of clinics we bring on is important, but the impact we make, I mean, it's all obviously important, but it's the, when you get down to it, it's that relationship between a parent and a child or your caregiver and a child mm-hmm. that is, it just makes it worthwhile.
What are some of the things you've seen?
Well, I think we can't overestimate the really value in the trust between the clinician and the family. I know that as a teacher, I always emphasized reading at home and required my middle school students to read 20 minutes an evening at home. But if you didn't have a strong early start, and if it really wasn't the habit in the family from day one, it's very, very hard to catch up. Experts tell us, in fact, that about 85% of the students don't catch up. There are exceptions, of course, and we're really, really, really proud of those students, and we champion those students who are able to, despite several opportunity gaps, succeed in school and in life. So just to see the in operation, more families reading and enjoying reading together at that very early age, I think that's critical. It's important for the family. It builds strong families, and it also establishes a strong community ethic. In Madison, for example, at the clinic where Dr. Nafsaria works as a pediatrician, Access Community Health, you see books, boxes of books in the waiting room from South Madison Public Library. And these kinds of connections where the whole community is involved and valuing reading with kids, I think this is really critical.
In Wisconsin, you know, we've all seen, as you mentioned, Martha, we've all seen this sort of terrible record that our state has in terms of the achievement gap and some places where we are 50th out of 50, the worst in terms of doing right. How do you see Reach Out and Read as sort of, you mentioned it as a kind of antidote, but how in sort of your vision of the way things would go if it all came out the way you'd like it to, 10 years from now, how would something like Reach Out and Read have made a difference in that record that puts us at the very bottom for achievement gap?
Well, obviously, we would not be where we are now. I think that in my vision, the difference would be that in schools, teachers would be able to spend their time doing other things and helping kids catch up. And kids would come to school prepared. They'd be excited about not only reading, but when you're excited about reading, you're usually excited about learning. And you can sit in a classroom and be engaged. A lot of kids that come to classrooms now don't know how to read. They are kind of shut out from some of the classrooms. And then, unfortunately, you know, there's behavior issues. There are, you know, they lag behind. And we shouldn't be there. We should be able to look and say, okay, if we make that early input when we get into schools, you know, the teachers won't have to deal with the literacy. They can deal with further learning. And I also think that if Reach Out and Read makes an impact with the clinicians, it will become part of the culture that the medical field will understand the important role they play in the achievement gap and the education of our kids, and being the really early on prime focus of where parents get information. They should know that this is part of it. It's not just, okay, you need to have this inoculation now and, oh, your child has a fever, you know, watch it for 24. Read to your child. This is important. It not only makes a difference in school, it makes a difference for their health their entire lifetime. So it's kind of a different focus where literacy should not just be keyed in on the schools, but it should be keyed in on a child's life. And so when a child then gets past public school, hopefully they would continue on and they could be productive members of the community, and we would be saving the money that has to go into programs because we haven't put in that initial investment.
One of the texts that I teach in the Odyssey Project is Frederick Douglass's narrative of his escape from slavery, where at that time it was against the law to teach a slave to read and write. And so his fight to have the right to read, you know, the little stratagems that he would use to teach himself how to read, it's very moving when you encounter that. And we're still sort of seeing the legacy of that, of whole groups of people that were denied literacy. There is a political angle to this as well. The people who are lagging behind with literacy are often those who are trying to catch up from being disenfranchised and kept out of a system that was meant to keep them out of it. Do you find yourself getting sometimes angry about our history as you look at who it is that is lagging behind in literacy?
I find myself getting very angry that a child's destiny is beyond their control. And I have told my children often as they were growing up, you know, you don't get to choose what family you were born into. And a child's destiny shouldn't be, as has been said, you know, dependent on the zip code you were born into. That makes me very angry. And I think that has always kind of pushed me to make sure that opportunities are available across the board, because it shouldn't be that way. I mean, children are innocent, and it's not, you know, they don't have the opportunity to say, please read to me, when they are, you know, an infant or two or three. They don't know. But everybody should have that opportunity and to then go on to learn. And so when they are at the point when they can ask to learn more, they want to.
I saw a quote included in some of the materials for this program by Dr. Nafsario, where it was a quote from Frederick Douglass, actually, writing in the 1840s, saying, it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And I'm thinking, well, that's back in the 1840s. He's already saying, you know, build strong children. If you don't intervene early, you're going to have all these broken adults that we have to rehabilitate, we have to kind of play catch up with. Frederick Douglass certainly was ahead of his time. We're going to have some final thoughts on the Reach Out and Read program when we continue in a moment with University of the Air.
Gabriel, he's my oldest. He's my 7-year-old. He's a lot like me. He reads books and he breaks down words that most kids his age wouldn't be able to touch. Right now, I know that one of his favorite books is Arthur. But I remember when he brought that book home from Dr. Cota's office, he couldn't read it.
I want them to be proud of the fact that they can read and that they're reading so well and that they can comprehend, that they're just not reading words and don't know what it means.
I had to read it with him and help him break down the words and pronounce the words. And, you know, just the other day we were reading it, when I reading it together, I asked him to read it to me, and he just started reading. I'm sitting, I'm like, and my face is lighting up, and my wife is looking at me, and I'm like, you see this?
Said Father, just glorious, said Mother. Even D.W. was having fun.
And he's looking at me. I see him glowing because he's like, yeah, Daddy's proud of me. Daddy, think I can see? I give them and show them what my parents can show me. It is overwhelming.
The Sound of Parents from the Reach Out and Read program. I'm Emily Auerbach, and I'm back with three guests from the Wisconsin's Reach Out and Read program, Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria, and also Jessica Doyle and Martha Vukelic-Austin, who are the co-chairs of Wisconsin's Reach Out and Read program. You know, I get goosebumps listening to the parents talk. You must feel that all the time in your practice.
Yeah, it's certainly amazing what this does for parents, too. Just watching their children succeed, that, you know, this notion that their kids don't have to feel the same sense of struggle that they have too. It makes them proud, and it makes them feel that they've done something right. And you know what? They have done something right. It tells me that they've put in the hours that we've asked them to. It tells me that they're interacting with their child. They're being there with them. They're responding to their questions. All those sorts of things. You know, it's not just about the reading. It's really about the parental interaction. And also the mediation. You know, even if your child is watching TV, there's a big difference between your child watching TV in another room or, God forbid, by themselves in their bedroom, which happens more often than you'd think, and the parent sitting there with their child and helping them understand and make sense of what's on the screen and talk about how realistic or unrealistic or wise the things they're seeing are.
The Reach Out and Read program is really targeting pediatricians. I mean, they become the sort of purveyors of the books. How do you see it changing doctors and changing the clinics that they work at?
It's really amazing. I think most of us who do any sort of well child care, whether it's through pediatrics or family medicine or allied health, we went into this field because we want to help make a difference for families. And because of the way healthcare has changed, so much has become fill in the blank, kind of assembly line, this rote sort of thing. And I think what a lot of healthcare providers feel, particularly when they're working with families that struggle, is the sense of frustration. How in the world am I supposed to fix the kid who's failing school? How am I supposed to make neighborhoods safer? How am I supposed to do these things? I can't do that sitting in my clinic. And my answer to that is, yeah, you can't do that sitting in your clinic, which is why we at the University of Wisconsin, we try to make sure our medical students also learn about public and population health measures. Reach Out and Read is a population health measure. It reaches out beyond the clinic. Its effect is really deep. And you see all of a sudden our residents and medical students that I work with in the clinic who have gotten used to the, okay, ask the set of questions on the screen and fill in the blanks, they suddenly start to get it when I say, so tell me, you were in that room, what did the child do with the book? Okay, what was the parent's reaction? Oh, well, I didn't look. You got to be looking every second. Did they turn to their parent and hold it out at 18 months of age in that universal read-to-me gesture? You've just learned some amazing things about that child, about their parent, and about their home life. And I sometimes show a video clip of a typical Reach Out and Read interaction, and we learn all about their home life and what happens and who's at home and what they do together as a family, and you really get the sense that they enjoy being around one another. You can hear the child babbling and fluently turning pages. And when I finish talking about all the things we've learned in that clip, I point out that it took a whole 3 minutes. So in 3 minutes, what have I learned that makes my job better in my job of doing developmental assurance? You know, that in that 3 minutes, it you can't get that through a checklist. You can't get that through a screening form, but you can do it very efficiently. And you see people starting to think not so much about how do I fill in the blanks, how do I fill in the boxes, but what can I do for this family? Because if you ask me what's the single most important factor about lifelong health, it's actually not diet or nutrition, it's not exercise, it's education. If you don't have a great education, you're not going to have the ability to have a great career, and then you don't have all the resources that lead to you being able to live a happier, longer, and healthier life.
And I assume also important would be having a caring environment, having someone who, you know, believes in you or loves you or wants you to do well, because you can read all the books you want, but if you're coming out of an abusive situation, that's not healthy either.
That nurturing relationship matters. And, you know, while we want kids to be surrounded with multiple strong, supportive relationships, having just one makes a difference. You know, there's all these stories about kids who came from terrible situations, but, you know, were successful. When you look in their histories, generally there was at least one person who cared about them and believed in them and made a difference. And, you know, our healthcare systems are starting to recognize this when through Reach Out and Read and other sources, and they're starting to fund Reach Out and Read and bring it on board their entire clinic systems. It's not just, you know, one person has this notion. They're seeing that this is a good way to support your community, be really part of your community, and this is part of doing quality healthcare now.
I wanted to ask each of you sort of, you know, why personally you got involved in this program and how it's changed you in some way. Let me start with you, Jessica Doyle. You were First Lady of Wisconsin when your husband was governor. I know you did a lot of things with the schools during that time, but what made you sort of become part of this Reach Out and Read program and how has it changed you?
I think for my whole life, I've really been aware of the power of reading. I will start out with my family, two sons, and we always read together just before bed. It was a great way to wind down, and I found actually that it helped me as much as the kids. And when both our sons were in middle school years, I remember reading books together just because we had that habit throughout. So we may not have had time or, well, I don't want to generalize about middle school boys, but they're not always the most conversant about what happened in school that day. But we would read together. We'd read books from the ones that were assigned in school to Judy Blume books that I'd bring home from the library. And it was just a wonderful way to keep that connection going, regardless of what else had happened during the day. When I heard about Reach Out and Read from Dipesh Navsaria, I must say one thing really struck me. He talked about our large hospitals and how often when a child is hospitalized that people really spoil the child with their favorite foods and with a television set and, oh, even video games. And as he pointed out, where were the examples of the good literature? Where were the books? And I realized that this kind of thing, building the reading habit and really making time to read, it's not going to come naturally because there are many, many distractions in all our lives. I'm glad Martha pointed out the value of this for parents of all income levels because I know I always needed to be reminded myself to make a special time for reading. But every time I did, it was well worth the effort. I think when children are very, very young, it's really not always that every interaction works out perfectly then either. And if you feel great about yourself as a parent, I think that impacts the child too. And it's really a reciprocal feeling. So sharing a good book together or even going grocery shopping together and walking down the aisles and knowing that I needn't feel threatened when the child that I was with was, you know, asking to linger longer in a grocery aisle because you could read over the ingredients and the cereals and you could hold up the fruits and talk about the vocabulary words. And it not only made the experience more tolerable, but it is just another way of reminding parents that we all need to build these vocabulary experiences and reading into our lives.
And it makes life seem so rich. You can have an adventure at the grocery store or just seeing a squirrel on the grass. Martha, you were president of the Foundation for Madison Public Schools, so I know that you've got a big interest in education. What made you sort of go earlier here with the Reach Out and Read program?
Well, over my lifetime, I've always been very concerned about early childhood experiences. I had been involved in United Way efforts 25 years ago. I had actually professional experience with the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families with something called the Better Badger Baby Bus Tour, which really highlighted the importance of those first years. And I have four children, and so kind of lived it and saw the difference positive interactions, reading, building relationships can make. And also, I think it, when you look at the world through the eyes of a child and you point out, look at that bird, look at that piece of grass that's a different color, the leaf that's changing, or, you know, when you realize that they're just soaking it all in and you want to kind of help that process, I've always just been really engaged by that. And so when I watched my kids go through school and then as with my work with the Foundation for Madison Public Schools and really seeing the difference, and I think it's got a lot with income disparity, with the times, we just have so many distractions in our life. And it is hard to remember that, oh yeah, we have to include reading as parents are either working hard or taking their kids to different enrichment activities. That sitting down with your kid is really important, and sitting down with your grandchild or the neighbor child if you have that opportunity. And so that when I was given the opportunity to join the council, I said, I don't really have time for this right now, but I have to do it. I have to do it because it's important, and it really does kind of take me back to my passion of those first 3 years. Those 1,000 days are so important and can make a difference.
And let's say that somebody is listening from a Wisconsin community that doesn't yet have a Reach Out and Read program, but they want today to do something different. What are some of the techniques that you advise in your practice or just in general if parents say, you know, I wasn't read to as a child. I don't even like reading. And there's all these books at the library. I don't know what to get and what to do. What do you say?
So here's the secret. It should be fun. You know, this is actually not drudgery. We're not asking anyone to ask, you know, to write essay questions or have long discussions about something canned. It's really about the interaction more than anything else. It's a concept we call dialogic reading, and it's been around for a long time in the education world. And really, it's a dialogue. It's a back and forth. And this is actually really important because for a lot of families that struggled, if we just say, oh, just read to your child, and we just stop there, there's often this notion of, oh, okay, well, I should just sit my 15-month-old down and they should sit quietly while I read aloud. Well, that doesn't work very well with a 15-month-old because they naturally have an attention span of about half a second. That's normal. That's not a problem. However, if you just read aloud to them and don't do anything else, they'll start getting squirmy, they'll walk off, whatever. And then the parent, unfortunately, will often say, oh, see, he doesn't like it. See, he's just like me. And when we bring this up in our discussion, this is what we train our healthcare providers to really look for and ask about. We say, no, so actually this is normal. I want you to do something just a little bit different. When you read aloud, ask your child questions about what's there on the page. Where's the doggy? Can you find the doggy in this picture? Is this a red balloon? Yes, it is. Let's count the number of birds together. It may not be in the text. That is absolutely okay. There's nothing wrong with it. These are young children. We're not expecting them to sit there and listen to all these things. Let them pick the order they turn the pages in. Let them make up stories. Let them choose the books. Let them do all those things. So do dialogic reading. Read together every day. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. My prescriptions to read that we hand out actually say, you know, about 20 minutes. When your child gets a little older, put a bedside lamp by their bed and give them a few minutes to look at a book quietly on their own just before, you know, it's time for lights out. It sets up a nice habit for them. Use your school and public libraries because there's just so many wonderful free resources there. And really, have this be fun. Have this be something to look forward to. Don't make kids read as a punishment. Don't take away reading as a punishment either, you know. Have this be something that's really something that you do together, because one of the most important things I ever heard is that parents are their children's first teacher. And the other corollary to that is that children are made readers in the laps of their parents. It's not us doing it in the healthcare office. You know, we're advising, we're encouraging, but it's the parents that are doing this.
I want to thank my three guests, not only for being guests on University of the Air, but also for the work you're doing. It's truly exciting. My guests have been Dr. Dipesh Navsaria, Jessica Doyle, and Martha Vukelic-Austin from Reach Out and Read. I'm Emily Auerbach, hoping you'll join us for the next hour of University of the Air.